Hi, everyone. This will be one of the more personal episodes in this podcast series as I speak to Jake Roche. Jake's parents have been close friends for decades, and I've known Jake since he was in preschool. Jake is now Director of Educational Technology at Collège du Le Mans in an IB school in Switzerland. We speak about international teaching, blended learning, being an Apple Distinguished Educator, and the philosophy of teaching as a lifelong mission. Please stay tuned to hear from this wonderful educator. I'm sure you'll be as inspired as I was proud to hear from Jake. Welcome to IB Matters, a podcast for those who currently teach, lead, attend, or are interested in International Baccalaureate IB schools. Hi, folks. Welcome back to IB Matters. And I have a very, very special guest with me today. His name is Jake Roche. And I've known Jake, I figured out the other day, I think since you were 3 years old, Jake. Does that sound about right?
I think so. Yeah, I think it, as long as I can remember, you've known me.
As long as you can remember, yeah. I played softball with his dad for years. And so our families would get together. And in fact, I have a daughter the same age as Jake, and they both went into teaching. And Jake, it turns out I was out to dinner the other night with his mom, and we were talking about what Jake's up to. And it came to my mind that you listeners would love to hear kind of what he's been doing, because he's got a cool journey that he's taken to get where he is. And I'll let Jake introduce himself. Hi, Jake. And why don't you go ahead and tell people what you're up to and how you got to where you are now?
All right. Well, that's a long story, how I got to where I am now. But the short answer is I'm the Director of Educational Technology at Collège du Le Mans, which is a international school in Switzerland. Right. And I started as a teacher in Minnesota and moved to the UK and worked in an international school there, and then moved to France. But now I work in Switzerland. So I say I'm an American turned British, living in France and working in Switzerland.
Correct. And I think your school is the language of instruction English, or is it bilingual?
We're bilingual, so it's English and French. Okay. But there is more, like you'll find in many international schools, we have more students in our Anglophone program, English program, than we do in our Francophone program, but they're both thriving programs, I would say.
Sure. Well, early on in the series of podcasts, I did a podcast with a friend of mine who is currently here in the United States, but he spent quite a few years, and I think he even met his wife in international teaching. Maybe talk a little bit, if you would, Jake, about kind of the experience of moving from the American system, having grown up in it and started teaching in it, to international or teaching in other countries from the United States, because there's a lot of people listening here that are probably considering it if they're not already in an international school.
Yeah, you should definitely consider it. And in preparation for this podcast, I was thinking about, if you're in the United States and you're an IB teacher, you have plenty of options for teaching internationally. The IB is all over the world, and it's difficult to find teachers with IB experience. So if you have that IB experience and you're thinking about teaching internationally, you should really look seriously, because there are options for you. But the way I got started was a long time ago, in the early 2000s. And I won a sweepstakes. It was a travel book. And in the back of the book, there was a page that you could fill out and mail in. This is how early it was, in 2002.
Actual snail mail. Yeah.
So I did. I mailed it in. And a few months later, I was back at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, where I was going to school for education. Mm-hmm. And my parents emailed me and said, or they didn't email, they called me and said, we've got a letter here for you. And this looks a little bit funny. When you get a piece of mail and you're not quite, it's kind of special. Mm-hmm. So I said, open it. And they said, you won tickets to Hong Kong. And sure enough, I had won the sweepstakes. So I went to Hong Kong and I stepped off the plane and I was hooked. I was hooked on international travel. Uh-huh. So as soon as I graduated from university with my degree in education, I looked for jobs internationally. And I got a job in China. And so the next thing I knew, I was on my way to China to teach for a year. And it was a great experience. And then I came back to Minnesota, got my master's degree. When I was in China, I met my wife. Yeah, she was a British teacher in China. So then she moved to Minnesota. And then together we decided to move to the UK. And I found a job in an international school there. So that's kind of my road into international school teaching. And it really stemmed from just taking chances and...
The original risk taker.
The original, I don't know about that. Yeah. But I think, I truly believe if you're a teacher and you're highly qualified, you can find work anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what we've always gambled on. And my wife, she's just become a teacher. And she had some different options to get her qualification. And I said, do the best qualification you can, because then you always have that. You always have that qualification. And it's just you're just going to be happier in your career, I believe, if you're a highly qualified teacher.
Right, right. And your wife's got a unique experience too. My understanding, she's from the UK, but she's a Francophone, or she's, you know, fluent and actually teaches French. Is that correct?
She teaches, yeah, she's fluent in French. But she got her degree in English. So she has an English degree, an English PGCE, from this specialized program in Switzerland that has links with Durham in the UK. She received her qualification while in this international school. So, and then she got her teaching degree there, and then she was hired on to that school after.
Sure. Okay. Interesting. So I want to make this a little bit, not too personal, but a little bit personal, just because listeners who are thinking about this, I know for a lot of people, what stops them or makes them really consider deeply, my friend John Eversole, who we did a podcast with earlier on the same or similar topic, talked about the role of having a family and children played into this. You want to talk about how, you know, being, you know, your children kind of grew up in this environment, so they probably don't know much different, but your children speak French, basically. Is that correct?
Yeah, they speak French. And that's, you know, it's great. And they like doing it, and they're very fluent in both languages. And to anyone that, you know, has kids and is thinking about teaching internationally, I would say do your research.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth doing. The international school community is very welcoming to new people arriving. And, you know, I was prompted to think about the difference between international teaching and my experience in Minnesota teaching, both really great. But one of the benefits of international teaching is things change all the time. There's always people coming and going and different positions available and hiring. So when you arrive there, usually there are a lot of other people arriving too. So it's really nice and easy to make friends.
Yeah,
because people don't have their at-home friends. You know, they don't have their family living nearby. So we all need to rely on each other, and you make all these wonderful connections.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that from several people that have kind of entered into that. And a lot of the guests that I've had on are, like you said, they're expats teaching in other places, or they are themselves are from, they're not from the US originally. They're from, let's say, Hong Kong, but they're teaching, you know, in Korea or in India or whatever. So yeah, it thanks for that. It's, I'm sure that's really going to be interesting for people to hear about. I'm always envious when I think about your children growing up. Just think about the kind of, it's in their DNA, at least figuratively in their DNA, that they are, you know, they're ready for a lot of different things, and they've got skill sets that, you know, I know they're teaching you French, basically, right?
Oui, 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 c'est ça. I'm not going to speak French on your podcast.
No, and I
that's not going to happen.
I'm going to barely
speak. This is where that's going, where I'm going to start speaking French. It's not going to happen.
No. I can barely speak English. So we'll just stick with this, our language of podcasting. So yeah, thanks for that background, Jake. I appreciate that you sharing that with people. Let's talk school a little bit. And this being an IB focused podcast, I'm kind of interested to hear, you know, because I think this is your first IB school. Is that correct?
I taught in an international school in the UK. It's the ACS group of international schools, and they offer the IB as well as my new school, College du Le Mans. And they're both have an IB track. Okay. And this is common in international schools where either they'll be full IB, you know, where they do the early years program, the middle years, and then the IB, or that IB just sits in those final 2 years and it's something students can choose to do.
Okay.
So here we have the American High School Diploma Program with AP courses that a student could choose to do, or they could choose to do the IB. And so it's nice because if a student doesn't really fit the IB profile, then there's another track for them to go down.
Being an IB school that has different, options for students, do you find that, is there any combining of courses? Like one, I actually had somebody, we have a Facebook page now for this podcast, and I had somebody ask me to see, in international schools, how do they combine things like IGCSE or AP or other things with the DP, the diploma program? Do you have any combined courses, or are they all kind of separate standalone?
They're separate standalone, and students in grades 9 and 10, they can do the IGCSE, which we feel is great preparation for the IB program. Mm-hmm. So that's one way where we'll determine if a student is, is going to enjoy the IB and if it's going to be good for them is if they do well or just really enjoy the IG program, then the IB program is probably for them.
Yeah. Well, one of the ways, you and I were just talking off air about the well-rounded student versus the kind of the centrally focused student. And I've used that when I've tried to, talk to kids about choosing the diploma program. I said, if you're willing to take your educational vegetables, the idea that, the things that you don't love on your plate, but you still are willing to learn about and see how they kind of build a well-rounded student. I think that's one of the great things about the diploma program is that it does force a student to be well-rounded academically. And then, of course, if they do the full diploma, they're doing the core with the CAS and the TOK and extended essay. So they really get a really well-rounded education. So it sounds like your school is kind of built around finding those students and really promoting that well-rounded academic, ultimately all-star to be a diploma student.
Yeah, and it is great to watch students develop those areas. If they're very math and science focused, but then all of a sudden they find themselves loving poetry,
right?
And they're looking at it from a math and science perspective, and so there can be some really interesting opportunities within the IB to challenge students, and that can only be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Just not to make it too much about me, but one of the things I respected when I first learned about the diploma program and how it's structured is I had a personal experience. I was a math and science kid growing up. I liked history, but math and science were my focus and I became a science teacher. But I was forced by distribution requirements at my university to take art classes. And they literally kicked me dragged me into the art classes. And it was like, I had a terrible attitude to start with. And after about halfway through the semester, I just remember a light bulb going off and it's changed my life. I mean, my respect for the arts and how my children have been involved in the arts, it all comes from the fact that someone made me take art and art related subjects. And I think that's one of the cool things about watching a young person develop. Like you said, they all of a sudden get turned on by poetry, not knowing, I would have been that kid. I was not into poetry, but, that's to me one of the cool things about IB and what schools can offer when they present that in front of students.
Yeah, and we talk about equipping students for the future, And I really think it's these unique combinations that are the most advantageous for future employment. You know, you just can't be good at computer science anymore.
Right.
You need to be a coder, but then you also need to know about something else that you can kind of combine it with. And it's going to be these unique combinations that employers really want to see. So the IB is really well suited for that.
Sure. Yeah. In the current economy as well, a lot of times there's no employer. You know, it's you kind of creating your value through your own skill set and the things your experiences have been. So those are things that, you know, I just think that this is, you know, I'm a proponent of what the IB does, but I agree with everything you're saying there. Let's talk a little bit about your kind of role in your school, because, you know, your role as a director of technology, educational technology, it's become really a big deal the last couple of years and year and a half, at least with the COVID, you know, restrictions that many of us are working under still. Why don't you talk a little bit about how that's worked at your school and kind of the journey your school's been on through this experience of the pandemic?
So when I arrived at CDL, College du Léman, you know, I was hired as this director of ed tech, and the school had lots of technology. You know, we're an international school and it's fee-based and the fees are quite high. Mm-hmm. And so we had all this technology, but we didn't really have a teaching methodology attached to it. Yeah. You know, we just had it. And so I realized I needed to attach a methodology, and I shopped around. There was Apple's project-based learning approach. But I settled on blended learning and started doing professional development on that. With the idea that you can't just teach teachers how to use ed tech tools if you're not really, you know, introducing a change in delivery of instruction. So we decided blended learning, and that was 5 years ago. So when the pandemic hit, our teachers had already heard blended learning over and over again and been through some blended learning trainings that I had put together. So in some ways we were ready, in some ways we were not ready. But it wasn't new to us.
So yeah, that's the thing with the hybrid learning or the blended learning. You know, a number of organizations, colleges, even the IB had just started using blended learning. I know the last time I did a training, I had to spend somewhere around 10, 12, 15 hours on my own, kind of preparing and doing online lessons before we met in person. Is that kind of how you define blended learning, that there's a combination of online and in person?
Yeah, and we say it's the best of online and face-to-face instruction. Okay. So when we were doing our blended learning program before COVID, you know, I would say things like, well, if you can introduce some really great online activities students can do at home, but then when they're in class, it doesn't need to be all on the iPad or the computer. You can get out the cards and do a card sort or have a group discussion because you've done this other work online outside of class. Mm-hmm. And the students are getting the immediate feedback or they're watching the video tutorial. So it was kind of playing with those aspects of teaching and learning that we were exploring with the blended learning.
Sure. Just a quick aside, when we were preparing to do this podcast, you shared with me an article that just came out. Is that organization, is that a educational blog that you were featured in just now or just recently?
It was Learning and Development Magazine, based out of Brussels.
Brussels, yeah. It's a great article. Lots of pictures and information, and it kind of talks about the journey that Jake's been taking to get to this. And we're gonna link that in the podcast notes. So those of you who want to read kind of more details about what Jake's talking about, we're also going to talk about some of those things, but I just want to make sure I get that out there that listeners can go to our podcast notes and read even more about that. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
And you were saying, so one question that came up while you were talking, so what's the difference, or is there a difference between what you call blended learning and say flip classroom? Cause that was also kind of a hot thing going on in the last 5, 10 years.
So I say blended learning is like the umbrella, and flipped classroom fits underneath there. Station rotation fits underneath there. Individual playlists fits under blended learning.
Okay.
So blended learning is this kind of big idea. And then there's these different ways to do blended learning.
Okay. So what do you say makes a really good blended learning experience for both the teacher and the student?
You know, what makes great blended learning is work worth doing online, which is important. You know, this work worth doing. It can't just be fun. Yeah. And it needs to have some sort of feedback for the students so they can, you know, they can see that they're learning. So that's the online component. And then the face-to-face component, I feel, needs to include a lot of interaction, whether that's teacher-student interaction or student-to-student interaction during the face-to-face part of the lesson.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, you know, one of the things that we've gone to with the work that I do with the Minnesota Association of IB Schools is that we went from a completely face-to-face model, and we've been forced to be, you know, last year we tried an entirely online because we had no opportunity to get together. This year we are going to be going to a blended or hybrid learning. We're going to start online, and we're hoping at least that things will settle down enough that we can get teachers from different school buildings together at least a half a day at semester time, essentially in early 22. So any suggestions for when you're working with adults versus when you're working with kids on blended learning experiences?
One of the things that is always, let me backtrack from that question. One of the things that have always frustrated me with education is, and this is probably something I heard you and my dad talking about, is what is good? Like, it's frustrating. You don't know what is good. Okay, I'm using technology in the classroom. Am I using it the right way? Am I using it the wrong way? Is this too much? Is this not enough? So I came up with a blended learning framework, which is based on different criteria that allows you to use backward design to figure out how you want to structure your blended learning experience. So, and you can kind of self-assess. So I can provide you with the link to that.
Oh, that'd be
and you
great.
Can take Thanks. A look. But in terms of designing something for adults, I think you need to determine, you know, what are your goals? You know, what do you want them to achieve? Clarity is super important when going online. You know, so much as teachers, you know, you're sitting at home and, you know, it makes sense to you. But then the first time you present it is live to the students. Right. Now, when you're teaching the class, I can look at their faces and I can see they're confused. But when you kind of send that out online, it's really hard to get that immediate feedback as the teacher to know whether what you're doing is resonating with the learner. So
sure.
I think clarity is really important, keeping it very, very simple. And people really appreciate that when online learning. It's fun when you're at home to just kind of start to spin off and build on it and say, oh, and then this, I can add this, and it'll make it more interesting for the learner. But really, sometimes by trying to make things more interesting, we actually confuse them. And then that leads to frustration.
Right. Yeah. So it's clarity, and which certainly goes a long way with students as well. But with adults, sometimes they need even more clarity because they want to know what to do.
And one of the things I found in online learning that the research is supporting, because it's all very new, but an important thing, if not the most important thing, is teacher presence. How present is the teacher in the learning? You know, so if you just, you know, Khan Academy is great, but if I just connect you to a Khan Academy course and say, see you in a few weeks, you'll log in the first time, but eventually you'll lose interest. Now, if you're doing something on Khan Academy and, you know, every other day you're getting something from me saying, hey, I see you passed, you know, the module. Well done. It looks like you're ready for the next thing. Or, hey, I've entered some scores for you and this is your feedback. Then all of a sudden you're going to be much more engaged.
Right.
So sometimes the debate becomes synchronous versus asynchronous.
Yep.
You know, so what's in real time and then what's self-paced. And I would argue that almost doesn't matter as much as the teacher's presence and personality in the course. So that's another tip I would say is make sure in this course that you design, especially the online element, that your personality and your passion is in the online component as well.
Mm-hmm. Good to know. You know, and I'm feeling good about ourselves because in on the Minnesota IB website, which I'll link on the podcast notes also, one of our most popular page views, and we've got thousands of hits on our page, this particular page from around the world, is our introduction to the IB programs, which is used by us and then by other people around the world to just learn a little bit about IB. In other words, get the first starting lesson. So if you have a new IB teacher to your building, newly hired, and you want them to just, you know, at least start the journey of knowing what IB is, get some of the terminology, they go to our website and there's a self-guided tour, and it's meant to be asynchronous, but we built in a reflection journal, and there are touch points where we say, now check with your new coordinator and see what, you know, talk to him about what you thought about this experience. And then, so the idea is like what you were just describing, you want to connect back with somebody who's in the know or somebody who is your supervisor and share with them what you've been learning and then get some feedback, and they can help you kind of get some positive vibes from what you've been learning so far. So I now I'm feeling good about our program, but I think what you're saying is exactly what I think what we're doing. So it's just good to hear.
No, it sounds really good. That interactivity and building that into the online, it doesn't need to be just yourself working and, you know, moving through things on your own. It try to bring in other people to the online is wonderful.
Yeah. I think that collaboration online, so it's not just you and the ether going back and forth. It's got to be human. Yeah. Jake, if I could, let's change the subject a little bit. A couple months ago, I had someone who was a Microsoft educator on to talk about how that happens. And you're an Apple educator, I understand. How does that go on, or what does that entail for you? It's as a credential, and then how it's been useful to you practically.
Yeah, Apple does two different qualifications. One is Apple Teacher, which is you can go online to, you know, just Google Apple Teacher. And you can, you know, pass some online tests, and then you get this Apple Teacher certification. So that's kind of one level. And then there's this other level of Apple education, which is called an Apple Distinguished Educator, otherwise known as ADE. And there are 3,000, and this is selective. So in order to become an ADE, I had to make an iMovie about how I use technology, and then you submit that to Apple, and then other ADEs review the videos and select some for those people to become Apple Distinguished Educators. So I went through that process and I was selected, and because of that, I'm part of Apple Europe. So I went to the Netherlands and, did a weekend of training with Apple, and they bring in Apple experts, and it's all these other people that love Apple products and are teachers, and we learn together and have some parties too. And it's really, really a lot of fun.
That sounds good. A great community. How have you found it to be practically helpful in your work?
Well, then you're part of this Apple Distinguished Educator community. So there's these people I can reach out to, who are highly engaged, highly qualified technology, you know, people that use technology really well in the classroom, and you get loads of ideas. There are Apple events that you're invited to that you can attend. A lot of them have been online and now, but before they'd be on site. And so you could go to different countries and connect with the Apple Distinguished Educators there and attend events. And it's just this really, really great community.
That's cool. And so I suppose then you can apply the skills and your knowledge in your own building and share it with teachers and students. And you do workshops. Is that part of that too? Or is that just because you're kind of known in your area to be a good tech leader?
So I do workshops a lot within my own school, but then I've been asked to do workshops outside of my school as well. And I think it's just because I've been doing this for a while and people ask me to do workshops. And before I was traveling to do them, but now I've just been doing a lot of webinars, which is great. Yeah. A webinar is a wonderful thing. Yeah. I'm loving it. One of the things to come out of you know, school closures and the inability to travel is just all these really great webinars, and I attend them and I lead them, and it's been really fun, and I don't have to travel.
Yeah. I have a number of, recently I've had quite a few guests on from South Asia, and a number of them I found out about because they were leading webinars, or they're still, you know, leading webinars almost weekly, it seems, and they love it. There's a relatively new organization supporting IB teaching, especially the PYP now moving to the MYP, called Toddle. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they've been running some big, you know, global with like tens of thousands of participants in webinars. And so it's just the one of the good things to come out of the pandemic has been this incentive to connect through electronic means, technological means. And it's, you know, it's obviously easier to operate. It's, you know, you have the challenges of not being in person, but at the same time, you have the ease of not being in person and no travel and hotels and foods and things like that. So it's glad to hear you're part of that. So now, as you are starting the new school year, and you are in workshop time, are the kids back yet, or where are you at?
Today was the first day with students.
With students. Okay. Exciting.
So I do a lot of prep before students arrive, getting our, you know, our software ready, getting our learning management system set to go, doing, I think I led 11 professional development sessions from preschool through high school. So this first day is kind of relaxing for me. All of a sudden, everybody's so busy teaching all of a sudden, they don't have time to get professional development or ask me for things or anything like that. So today was a good day, and I just got to enjoy and walk around. And I know a lot of students as well, and see families, and I was let out today, and it was really fun.
That's good. Is there anything, you know, anything else you want to share with the listeners, Jake, before we sign off? It's been a real pleasure to kind of hear your voice. Everyone, when you're talking, I'm sometimes just listening as you know, almost like an uncle of yours growing up, because I've known you so long.
Definitely.
And I'm so proud of where you're at and what you're doing. So I'm enjoying that part of this experience interviewing. But anything you want to share with the listeners about kind of your experience, either teaching internationally or encourage them in terms of using technology in their work?
I think, you know, teaching internationally, I like to leave people with that it is really rewarding. And if you're a teacher in America, like I was, you can be confident that you can go international and find a great job, and, you know, use the skills that you picked up in the US. Mm-hmm. Now, me, I say I had an unfair advantage because of people like you and my dad, because it was, you guys just sat around and talked about education all the time, and I was there. And so that's made it really, really easy for me to operate in, you know, in education settings. And so thank you for that, John.
Well, thank you. In fact, listeners, if you've been a regular listener, just a few podcasts ago, I interviewed another friend of ours is my age, Paul Koenig. And the title of that podcast was, Did You Make a Difference? And we even talked about your dad a little bit there. But that, you know, that idea that the peers that we had, and it sounds like you as well now, we were into teaching. We really wanted to be good teachers, and we wanted the best for our kids. And so it is helpful when your peer group of educators is on board with supporting the learning in all the ways. Not that all teachers don't have that intention, but I definitely know people that are, you know, that's not their conversation. They're sitting around after the softball game. They're doing something else. But, you know, that was kind of the our mode of living and working. It was kind of all one thing. And so I appreciate those words, Jake. It means a lot.
Yeah. It was just ingrained in me that teaching is fun. I mean, that's how simple it was for you guys. And it is for me now. It's just fun. You know, and if you're working in a school and you're not having fun, you know, change your mindset, because it can be just a really fun place to be. I mean, you can get stressed out and, you know, there's lots of work to do, but the reason why I think most people went into education you know, wasn't for the money. And it was just really to have a lot of fun working with kids and learning and interesting people that you meet. So I think that was kind of it. Just, you know, have a good time and work hard. And so that's what I've done in my career, and it's been really rewarding. And you can do that in an international school, and they are really fun places to be, as much as there is pressure and whatnot. So just look into it. If anybody is considering teaching internationally, I think my LinkedIn link is down there. You can message me. I think that's the best way to find out about international teaching is to find someone in that country working in an international school and connect with them, mm-hmm. and say, what's it like? What's it like teaching in Switzerland? And then get started that way.
Well, I'm very envious. When I was in elementary school, I still remember it's still my favorite country, and I've never been there, which is Switzerland. You know, I'm a skier, and I always imagined the Alps and going to Switzerland and all that. And, you know, as you know, you are on our short list of places to visit and people to visit. So it's going to happen. I can almost guarantee it in the next 5 years.
Oh, we love it.
So we
would get you up at Levate, greatest cross Nordic skiing around.
Oh,
yeah, it's a wonderful place to ski, loads of kilometers.
I'm in. So, well, thank you so much, Jake, for your time. I know it's a busy time with you right now with the start of school year and all that, but I really appreciate you taking the time and giving us such a personal tour of kind of your life and what you're doing, both professionally and personally, and giving great advice, I think, on a couple different fronts, the international teaching and also the hybrid and blended learning that people are doing right now. So thanks again, Jake. So great to have you on. Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's been really fun.
There are lots of links in the podcast notes, including the magazine article about Jake and blended learning, Jake's framework for online learning, our MNIB Intro to the IB Programs webpage, and Jake's contact information. Now that we have almost 80 IB Matters episodes covering a range of subjects, you can use our podcast webpage, which is organized by program and by topic. The link to the website is also in our podcast notes. We've also added a dedicated Facebook page for the podcast called IB Matters Podcast. Besides linking to our recent podcasts, it will have additional features highlighting our guests and further links from our podcasts. We encourage you to like and follow our Facebook page and make suggestions for future programs or questions you would like us to ask our upcoming guests. Please find all of our episodes wherever you get your podcasts and click subscribe so you don't miss any future programs. Join our over 2,700 followers on Twitter at MattersIB. Also, help us spread the word about IB by liking, sharing, and reviewing the IB Matters links in your own feeds and social networks. In just over 2 years, we've been heard in over 150 countries, a testament to the global reach of the IB.